Institute for Faith and Freedom at Grove City College presents Liberty Mail with the student fellows of Faith and Freedom.
Hello and welcome to Liberty Mail with the Institute for Faith and Freedom. I'm Grace Riley.
And I'm Aaron Jenks.
And we're so excited to be here at the Underground Studio here at Grove City College. And we're going to be talking to you today for episode 2 about the sanctity of life and some other interesting things. And just a reminder as well that we have an event coming up that's really exciting about biblical unity and critical race theory here at Grove City College on September 27th. And we're going to have Monique Dusson, Paul Kengor, and Carl Truman here as well for that. So it should be really exciting, and you should definitely check it out.
Yeah, we're super excited. We already have a ton of people coming. It's almost like 450 signed up right now. Outsiders, if you're not a student at Grove City College or a faculty member, you are free to come, and please come if you're in the Pittsburgh area. So hopping right into it, we wanted to really go into a topic that's what's going to frame your mindset, whether you're having conversations on culture or politics. One of the kind of big topics that we wanted to touch on is, okay, so the importance of the human being. And you see it all the time, and it is going to tie in later to the unborn. But how do we start that conversation from the forefront of just how do I treat each other? And then it 100% ties in to how you have conversations about politics, and especially with those you disagree with. And so I really liked Colossians 4:5-6 was what I wanted to start off with. And it's, be wise in the way that you act towards outsiders. Make the most of every opportunity. Let your conversation be full of grace, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how to answer everyone. And my favorite part of this is, okay, it's how you act towards outsiders. Because me and you and in the Christian community, we understand that maybe we can be a little more straightforward or blunt to those within the church, or if my brother is failing in some aspect of his life, or I see sin affecting him in a way. But I think a lot of the times where we might fail, and I know I've failed in this aspect, even this past summer, is talking to those who don't share that common faith with me. And so talking to outsiders is key. And it's key to not filling blanking on the word, but to not fill the stereotype you kind of hear always in media, you see on Instagram Reels, TikTok, whatever you're on, is that if you follow a couple of progressive pages that, okay, no, Christians are either hypocritical in this way. So it's how can we shed light to be the one Christian in this person's life or in whoever's life, you never know, and show them that, okay, yeah, I'm going to talk to you in a way that's full of grace. And it's going to be filled with salt and the love of Christ.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a really good point, too, off of what you're saying is that Christians do struggle sometimes to find the balance between love and between truth and how to kind of go about talking to people that they either agree with or disagree with. And in the world of politics and in conservatism, the why for us is what we believe about the value of life and the value of human beings. So going back to that core foundation and understanding, you know, that why, that all human beings are valuable and sacred and made in the image of God is so important. And it is important to understand that not everyone holds that view. And that kind of dictates maybe how to go about talking to people who you disagree with.
Yeah, and it comes across in the smallest of conversations. Like at the Colossians again, make the most of every opportunity. And so as you're listening to this right now, absolutely reflect on that. I know myself, I try to constantly at least have this come up in my notes or something and reflect this in prayer. It's like, okay, how have I been treating those around me who are fellow followers? And even at Grove City, there's a good amount of students who don't have faith, or they came here, grew up in the church, and you have to tailor your conversations kind of differently. But even in D.C. this summer, you have people working within the conservative movement who want nothing to do with religion. And it's, okay, how do I make most of this opportunity and act towards this outsider? And even some more things. I mean, Proverbs tells us that, okay, when we have this wisdom in our conversations towards the outsiders, or have wisdom in that conversations, what is then wisdom? And it's a gentle word. It's soft-spoken. It turns away anger and that emotion that builds up. The soft and spoken word is the wise word.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a really practical way to apply this, too, is, you know, when you're talking to people in your life about political issues or other important things in life, just being able to ask them questions and listen, because that'll usually tell you a lot about where they're at, what they think about kind of the more of these foundational things, if that makes sense. And asking questions, listening, and then responding in a pretty humble and respectful way is kind of the way to have these conversations and dialogues and go about things from the right mindset. Because another thing that Christians talk about a lot is what their role in politics should be. There's a lot of messy things going on in the political climate right now and in our country, and many Christians don't want anything to do with these things. They kind of want to stay out of them because they're messy and they just don't feel like it's a good place for them to be, basically. And I think, and I would love to know what you think as well, I think Christians absolutely have the responsibility to be involved in things going on in the world and to stand up and to share truth with others instead of kind of just cowering back and staying out of conflict. Because as Christians, we care about people, we care about human beings and about the world. And in order to really act on that, we have to understand that politics and policy and all of these things going on in our culture are heavily affecting human beings. And as Christians, it's our role then to kind of be a light and stand up for good things in that environment.
Yeah, well, I love when you started off and you said, okay, well, how do you have that correct conversation or how do you handle that conversation? And it's that you said that you take that step back and you mostly listen and clear your mind. And when you do that, it no longer turns into the popular Instagram reel of, oh, I just owned this lib. Or I just spoke, Ben Shapiro destroys a person that speaks up. It's like, okay, those are going to get clicks and stuff. But when we're trying to have valuable conversations and I really want to reach people and be the light where they see, okay, I am now treating someone who is supposed to be like the worst of the worst, on the left, and we're opposites, but I'm going to treat you with the grace and salt of love. And it's like, okay, yeah, well, okay, that hits you and it makes you stumble back. And we've been kind of taught that our whole life, so it's a blessing to know that.
And that's true.
I like putting that into the conservative movement is fundamental.
It is important, and I think we all have to reevaluate our motives a lot of the time. All of us do on both sides, because it can be fun and easy to just own the libs, as you were saying, and kind of just wreck people in a debate that you disagree with. That can be fun, but it's not going to ultimately be effective to change that person you're speaking with's mind. And if that is your goal, and I think as conservatives, we shouldn't sink to the level of the other side where we're kind of, you know, calling the other side names or calling them stupid or whatever it may be, or the libs, whatever it may be. I think we're a lot better off if we try to go at things in a more humble manner and in a respectful manner, understanding, you know, maybe this person I'm talking to like just doesn't understand the root of this. How can we have a conversation where we can really have an effective dialogue and maybe attempt to change someone's mind?
Yeah, absolutely. Or it's like sometimes it's as simple as like cleaning up your language. Like I remember in high school, like even before I was saved, like I would like use a swear word in an instance where just like, I don't know, it was like me being lazy. And I just was like, oh, yeah, this is like a cool thing. So throw it in. And then you just see that word like make someone angry. Or you see it like it takes the heat of the conversation and it just like amplifies it by two. Mm-hmm. Right. And so if you can just like, I mean, even in Colossians in this, I was like reading through and I think I have it pulled up. Hold up. I do. But it says even like clean out your conversation, rid yourself of foul language. And so it was simple stuff like that. And then I want to go back. I can't remember what you asked me. Do you remember what the end of your point was when you asked me? I can't remember.
It was probably just about how we can go about talking to people in the most effective way. But, yeah, I think on top of that, just trying to have the right mindset and understanding that the goal should be to reach people and change their minds and that it's not necessarily helpful to just try to wreck everyone in a debate, even if you can or if you think it's fun. It's just not very effective. And also not sinking to the level of the left really has gotten in the habit of calling the other side racist, calling conservatives racist, xenophobic, sexist, whatever it may be, the second that they disagree. And with that being said, it makes it easy for a conversation to stop. If someone calls you racist, you immediately are turned off and it turns into an argument. And that's a huge problem where we've lost the art of conversation in a lot of ways because people don't want to listen to each other or listen to their points. They just kind of want to react with talking points and name calling like that.
Yeah, for sure. And when if we do this successfully in the smallest interactions to the largest, where even if if you're interviewing on Newsmax and you show that this light is in you and you don't speak like every other social media pundit that just wants to kind of get their name out there and get those clicks, it gives you authority. I really think it gives you authority and a reputation where people are willing to listen and have that change of heart and change of mind.
Absolutely. And one of the big topics that I think we can examine this from is the topic of abortion and of life, because this is a topic where people get extremely heated and passionate about whatever side they believe in. Mm-hmm. A lot of name calling happens and people get extremely aggressive and passionate about this issue. So I think just breaking it down to the beginning of our conversation, we were talking about the dignity of human life. And how does this impact the unborn? Where do we draw that line, and what is life? When does it start, and when is it okay and not okay to end that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you've been seeing this especially pop up, at least with the Dobbs decision, recent Supreme Court filing. But now it's, okay, up to us to kind of lead, okay, how do we talk about this when we know, yeah, it's a mixed bag on opinions, and it's even a mixed bag amongst Christians. Like, how do you, like we said, like maybe Christians don't want to get involved in politics because they see it as a messy area and they want to live a righteous life. But it's, I think at the end of the day, for me at least, I can only speak to myself, is that, okay, am I going to sit back and kind of watch things that I disagree with happen, or am I going to try to make an effort and kind of share that light and the respect?
Yeah.
And so I wanted to start is, okay, yeah, how do we just define life from, without religion, religious aspect, because so often I think you hear again, and I'll say it again, is that like, okay, the social media or the Instagram reels, is that, okay, religious leaders or whoever, politicians are just trying to impose religion on the rest of America. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, take a step back. There are millions, and we talked about this last season, but there are millions of secular atheists who are pro-life and have organizations who are pushing a pro-life agenda without being a Christian or any type of religion involved.
Yeah, and I think the important point is that pro-life, being pro-life is not dependent on religion pretty much at all, because it's a scientific argument as well. Mm. It's a scientific argument that at the moment of fertilization, a baby is formed and unique DNA is formed. Their eye color, their sex, all of those things are formed at the moment of fertilization. That's scientific. So scientifically, without anything else, life begins at conception. And moving from that, Christians believe that we're all created in the image of God, because God says this. God says that He knit us together in our mother's womb, and that we are fearfully and wonderfully made. This is in Psalm 139, verses 13 through 14. So God says this, and He tells us this about life. But either way, both are scientific arguments, and we believe what we believe about life because it's truth. But both go together, and there are many scientific arguments to back this up. And scientifically, you can look at the stages of fetal development. When the heart starts beating, you can look at fingers forming at 8 weeks. At 8 weeks, babies are developing their hands and their feet, and the neural pathways in the brain are forming. That's only at 8 weeks. And if you go to 9 weeks, they can suck their thumbs, they can stretch, they can sigh. And moving forward through fetal development, babies can feel pain at the stages of abortion that are happening now in our country. And science has enabled us to understand and see that, where years ago we didn't have the technology to see, okay, babies are forming in this way and babies can feel pain at these stages. But what has always been clear is that life starts when a baby is formed in the womb. So life starts at conception, but and at fertilization. But what we're learning now is more about, okay, this baby actually is viable when you're saying it's okay to have an abortion. So, and a lot of people who are on the left that maybe are more pro-choice, you'd find, don't really understand what happens in an abortion. They just kind of hear the term abortion and don't think much into what that really looks like. But at all three trimesters of pregnancy, we see this. The first trimester, the abortion pill happens. The second trimester, there's suction, D&C, and D&E. And then following that, there's induction, which leads to an abortion, which involves tearing babies limb from limb. So it's a violent thing that a lot of people don't understand. And I think that if more people understood what the process really was like, they would be against it. And we've seen people's minds change.
Mm-hmm. And like you said, like people throw in that it's okay, maybe this policy is going to put people who need a procedure to save the mother's life into jail. And it's like, most of the cases I can think of off my hand, But someone comment if it's different, or that it's not. There are like these exceptions built in that are not even exceptions,
rare.
But it's just understanding that there's differential between, okay, I want an abortion, between, okay, this person needs a medical procedure or else their life is at risk.
Yeah.
And you phenomenally summed it up in I don't think I can speak better words to the scientific argument of the situation that you just put out there for like the past 2 minutes, is that there are so many things that science has let us seen and let us understand in the past 2 decades of, okay, how is this life cycle starting, right? Every mm-hmm. animal, every human has a life cycle, and it's become almost an argument of, at least from the other side, from the left, is that, okay, no, maybe life cycle does start right then. Like if put it in a textbook, yeah, life starts at conception, but is it really important at conception? And then it turns into this morality argument I see so often. And it's like, well, if it doesn't have a heartbeat, if it doesn't have a brain, then is it really human? And then they get into these weird fanatic arguments. But I think ultimately it comes down for the majority of people is to a morality argument. It's like, mm-hmm. okay, all the atheists that are pro-life, it's like, okay, are they going to – why do we want to protect the unborn? And it comes down to, no, like you said, it's scientific informed that this is a child. And then from that, they have the morality to be like, no, this is wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Live Action, which is a pro-life resource that we both recommend you guys checking out because
absolutely.
It has a lot of information.
Lila Rose
is the founder, yep, and a lot of information on different stages of fetal development, what it means, different legislation mm-hmm. that's out right now, and just all things related to this issue. But Live Action says, and I think it's a really great point to what we've been discussing, that at the moment of fertilization, the entire genetic makeup of a unique human being is formed. This includes sex, eye color, and other traits. The difference between someone at fertilization, 4 months into utero, 2 years old, 17, 35, and 80 years old is development, aided by nutrition and time. Mm-hmm. So no matter what stage of life you're at, you're still a human being. And this goes for an unborn child in the womb as well.
Yeah. And I think so many times, at least I hear it from those on the other side, is that, okay, well, yeah, it's not a perfect world. And there's women who can't have these children. And then maybe so often where the conservative side is failing, conservative movement is not providing answers. But Live Action and so many other numerous local kind of grassroots organizations are providing that answer. And that is the conservative understanding of how we are supposed to work in politics, that it starts at these local organizations and we don't look directly to the government. So yeah, maybe politicians aren't providing answers. I mean, later we might touch on Lindsey Graham's 15-week ban, but okay, that's a policy solution. But then what are the practical solutions? And so often it is what Live Action is doing, providing care for mothers, providing financial needs and even material needs during the months. So it's like when you hear this argument from the left that, oh, even if they had the child, they couldn't afford to take care of it. They don't have the means to take care of it. It's not holding up anymore as it might have used to.
Exactly. Yeah. And the other important thing to that is that just because maybe that's an issue doesn't take away the child's value or give someone the right to end the life of that child. So mm-hmm. and it's so true, though, that the pro-life movement has been stepping up but needs to continue to step up to support mothers and provide resources, especially with the Dobbs decision that just happened, which is a huge pro-life win. It happened June 24th back in June, it was a decision that then took abortion, overturned Roe v. Wade, and put this issue back in the hands of the states. And because of that, the opportunity for pro-life legislation to pass has become possible. And we've seen several different states place bans on abortion, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Texas.
I believe it was 16 states within the first mm-hmm. month.
Exactly. So it made these pro-life wins, we could call them, possible, where states are choosing life where they weren't able to before. So that's great. Mm-hmm. But with that comes the responsibility of, okay, we as Christians, as conservatives, and as liberals as well, need to stand up and be supportive to mothers and support these organizations that are providing care for children and mothers and providing these other solutions and working on the adoption agencies and things like that.
And it's such a winning argument to the point where it's, how can you listen to that and be like, no, we shouldn't do that. We shouldn't support it. But then you get into the dirt of the policy and actually government work, and it becomes hard. And like we're sitting back as citizens, we're like, okay, why is it so hard for government? Then again, why does government need to take care of that?
Yeah.
When you have these organizations that are successful in implementing what seems so easy from a side, you can be in the middle, you can be a centrist, you could be on the left, on the right, and you're like, yeah, that's what we should do. We need to help these mothers protect life. And then it's like, we just need to start with each other, and you don't need to look towards the government for these solutions.
Yeah, you're so right, and really looking at the value of life too, because with all this considered, the point still stands that it's not okay to end the life of a child because we all are all created uniquely. And, you know, when a child, when they're created in the womb, there is never going to be that child again, never that person again. They have unique DNA. It is a person and it is valuable. So he or she deserves the right to life.
Absolutely. I mean, it's at the first couple sentences with the Constitution, the right to life. And so as we, like, think about it within the faith aspect, it is that, like you said, it's the Imago Dei, which is made in the image of God. And that's why we so strongly are motivated. So I think we've included a really good kind of case point and breakdown of the whole whole kind of argument of sanctity of life from we have touching on pro-lifers that are atheists, the secularists, and then but majority of us that want to kind of influence and lead within the conservative movement is from that Christian perspective, and that this life is sacred no matter what.
Yeah, and I would say a lot of, I think, questions that conservatives tend to have is, well, how do I talk to my friends or family members about this issue? How do I stand for my points? And on social media, it can be a nasty place where it's hard to post things in support of life because the pro-choice side will just come and attack. I've experienced this personally, and I've seen it happen to so many other people. And I think it's important, and I would say that talking about just the truth of it, showing your peers and family members what an abortion really is, and just asking those hard questions of, well, if the heart is beating then, or if life does begin at fertilization scientifically, we should be thinking about, well, is it okay or not to have an abortion? And I would say it's not. But having those hard conversations at the most foundational level and showing people Live Action as resources, what an abortion looks like, what it means, and talking about the other solutions that there are to choose life.
Yeah, and you say these conversations, and in your experience, is it more of an effect or more of a positive effect when you have those person-to-person sit-downs or group late-night talks versus when you post something and you get that feedback? Like, what is the actual – how do you see the impact translate in both of those situations?
What I would say is conversation is always really great to just be able to sit down, break things down with mutual respect for each other. But also, I would say, from posting, what I've learned is if you do a post and you really do include resources of this is what an abortion is, watch this video, you can see what a procedure is. I usually, in my experience, get way less hate comments because people see that and don't know how to respond to it.
Instead of those quick kind of
whereas if you post, oh, I'm pro-life, people will freak out about it and comment and oppose it. But when you kind of put those resources in front of them, they don't know how to react to them. And I think you never know what seeds you're planting when you share the truth like that and people see it and kind of have to think about it and ask themselves some hard questions.
Yeah, I appreciate that a lot. And I think that involves a lot of wisdom on your behalf and your experience, and then prudence in posting. For right or wrong, I've kind of eased off any kind of politics on social media. Mm-hmm. I've only I've experienced a lot of kind of disconnect between people, and I'm a little more old school to the fact where I'll just sit down with some random and have these conversations person to person. But
and
like
the
you
same
said,
to I, you then, because that's still it takes courage to do that, to have those hard conversations, and even on this podcast for you to be standing for life and sharing your thoughts here. It takes courage to do that. So same to you.
Yeah, there you go. And I guess we will go forth and learn how to at least balance it between the social media aspect and then, like we started off with Colossians, is speaking to the outsiders. Because we know what we believe within the conservative movement and within faith-based circles, but it's how do we influence and have these conversations with outsiders.
Yeah, and show them the truth.
Absolutely. So thank you for tuning in today's episode. We appreciate wholesome conversations with you and just listening. And we hope that You take what we've had and maybe reflect on some of the things earlier. And then also let us know what you think down in the comments below. There's a subscription bell or below, and hit the like, please, too. But thanks for checking into Liberty Mail this week.
For more information on the Institute for Faith and Freedom, visit faithandfreedom.com.